へへへ。
Hang on, I need to clear out a thing or two on my phone. Oh, nope, never mind. All right, how was everybody's Thanksgiving?
It was good. Had Thanksgiving on the beach. So Ian pretty much spent the entire time swimming, or at least in the water.
This does not surprise me in the least.
It was definitely nice to be home for once.
Is this the first year they encourage students to go home for Thanksgiving?
Well, we actually got more of a break because before we only got Thanksgiving off. And so this year they decided to give us breaks. So now we have Thursday and Friday off. So I skipped Wednesday and drove up Wednesday with my roommate.
Hey. Yeah, they never let us do stuff like that. You are privileged.
It's so nice.
All right, let's get this party started. This tonight's going to be canon, but we will. Excuse me. Okay. It will be canon, but we're going to make just a little bit of a detour for tonight, and it probably won't be as long as normal. So, actually, if I, oh no, it's not ready yet. Shoot. Okay, I'll have to play it later. I have a sound file. Played. I forgot to upload it to YouTube with, last time on the show and highlights of the last time. But anyway, when you last left off, Malice was freed, and she had summoned a very large hand that grabbed Miles and was going to slam him on the ground when everything froze in place, TARDIS doors opened, and you heard a voice from the Time Stone speaking to Carrick. I can give you this one chance if you're willing to take it. Carrick then performs Paladin Sacrifice, switching places with Miles. He gets slammed on the ground and is instantly killed. However, when you get back into the TARDIS and escape the now raging volcano, the Doctor was able to lock onto a signal from one day in the future, which you all went to. You arrived on a sloping ridge where you found a half-orc, which was Carrick, reborn. You all were also able to watch as the flagship for the Emperor's Armada suddenly came into view. You were able to listen in as he had a conversation with Trent Reimer, and during this time you learned he now knows where the base for the guild is. Miles, being in a rage, ran forward as fast as he could. Caught up with them to do battle, but he was no match at all for the Emperor, who knocked him out cold very quickly and took him back up to his ship. Now, presumably, all of them are traveling to the guild, and the Doctor is quickly sliding down from the ridge, shouting, "We have to get back. Have to warn them as quickly as we can." And he is rushing back over to the TARDIS. What do all the rest of you do?
Carrick will turn and run after him. Be like, "Wait a minute, but what are we gonna do about Miles?"
Doctor doesn't seem to hear you as he's rushing into the TARDIS.
We can't just leave him there. We've got to go and get him.
The doctor's here this time. He looks a bit torn, as he's fiddling with things on the control console. We. He comes over to you and says, "Look, right now there's a whole lot of people in danger over in the base. We can't get into the Flying Fortress right now. If we do, then the base will have no warning at it whatsoever about what's coming on. But," he goes over to fiddle with some things, hits a bell with a hammer, "if we can get to the base in time, warn them what's going on, that we can come back for Miles.
All right, well, I suppose that makes a bit of sense. And Carrick will just kind of step aside and let the doctor do what he does.
All right. There were a few things fried from this last jump into the future. Thank you for that, Carrick. But, and he throws a few levers, I think we can navigate ourselves at least to a different point in space. And as soon as everybody's in the TARDIS, he closes the doors and starts shoving some things around. The TARDIS shakes a little bit, and then you hear a voice coming out of the time stones that says, "Not just yet, heroes. There is more information you need to know before you proceed." And suddenly, the TARDIS starts shaking violently. The doctor's hands are off the controls, and he's shocked seeing that the TARDIS is moving itself, and he's throwing some things around and shouting, "No, no, 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 no!" You hear another voice. You recognize this voice. It is most definitely the voice of Susivni. "No! No! This shall not be permitted!" And you feel another shaking of the TARDIS. And suddenly the TARDIS is flying around violently, shaking one way and then the other. It's all you can do to hold on to things. And suddenly everything goes black. Aesel, you are hiding in the flagship up with Manea. Trent Reimer has just brought in an unconscious Miles, and it seems like he's secured him to a table, almost like a table or case that Miles has been plugged into. Think about the Borg recharging units, and that's very similar to what they just shoved him into. Also similar to what you can see many of his copies are sitting in. But you feel this wave of nausea come over you. Your vision gets a little bit blurry. Manea looks very concerned, and as you swoon, he catches you in his arms, and the world goes black. Carrick and... oh, just a moment. Carrick and Bruman. You wake up, and you are not in the TARDIS. You, however, are in a grassy field, right up next to a forest. And as the light from the sun is peeking through the leaves and shining on your face, you see something else glinting. Carrick, there is a spear very close to your face. A very tall man is handling it. He's a big guy, and with war paint across his left cheek, and a long braid going down, black braid going down his back. He looks very much like definitely suntanned. And roll a perception check.
That's not very good. Let's see, that would be a 17.
Okay. It's good enough. This man, you cannot see any sort of family resemblance to Manea Hukuro, but from the little time you spent around him, this man looks kind of similar, possibly from the same tribe or the same people group. And as he shoves the spear close to your face, he looks at you and says, "What business have you here, halfling?"
Okay, first of all, you might want to put that away before you hurt yourself with it. And secondly, I think you might need to get some glasses because I'm certainly not a halfling.
He shoves it much closer. It is very nearly brushing your nose. "You are a half-orc, are you not? My eyes do not deceive me."
All right, well, half orc, but you did say halfling. That's quite different. I've known a few of them. They're kind of smaller, and he just kind of keeps going on that way. He'll try to sit up. if you can.
He will be allowed to sit up, though the spear stays very close to your face. What is this babble you go on about? And his companions also bring out their spears and point them towards you. Brunin, however, they seem to more or less be leaving you alone. A few are keeping their eyes on you, but they seem to be mostly focused on Carrick. What babble is this? Either you are quite daft, or you are sent from the enemy here to attempt and confuse us. That is a foolish thing. You cannot confuse they who are of the world. Now, answer me plainly. Are you of the enemy, or are you a friend?
Well, but I don't really know who you are. Now you do remind me of a rather large gentleman, Manea, that I know, but certainly you can't be related to him, because he's not exactly smart, but at least he's good and kind, and sticking spears in my face is not the way to get what you want out of me, so take your little spears and point them elsewhere.
The man does take his spear away, and then... Does a 7 hit you flat-footed?
No, it does not.
Okay, he does take the spear away and then flips it around, tries to shove the butt of the spear at your face. But you are quite quick enough. Go ahead.
Carrick will wild shape into a hawk and fly up into the sky.
They are all shocked at this, and they look all in wonder. The spears then go back to a resting position, and in fact, Brumin, there's someone who is helping you up. The man who is speaking to you comes to, I assume you go and roost in a tree.
He's circling over up like 80 feet up in the air, but he's circling with his hawk eyes watching the whole scene below.
Okay, he will try to shout out to you. My apologies! It is obvious that you are not of the enemy, for you are of the woods, the fields, and the land as we are.
Does Brew hold out his arm? Because if he does, then Carrick would totally land on it.
Sure.
Then he comes down and he perches on Bruman's arm.
Another one of the men will step up and say, I have heard rumors of this before. The half-orcs who know the ways of the wild. But this is not a thing that has been in this land for centuries, millennia perhaps. The original man will then approach the two of you, and he'll grab at his chin just a little bit. Then indeed you cannot be of the enemy. I apologize, but we cannot be too careful, for the orcs have of late been restless, raiding many, many families and villages along these lands. Where is it that you hail from, travelers? For obviously you are not of my people, and you must not be of here.
Does Carrick speak in hawk form?
No, he actually can't, because he didn't take that feat. So, no, he can't speak in hawk form. He just chirps and calls just a little bit, but it's obvious that he can't form speech.
A woman will come up with the other warriors and say, one moment. And she waves her hands around, moves her feet, and it's kind of like, almost looks like an intricate dance that she's doing. And she extends one finger and taps you on the head. And suddenly, something stirs within you, and your beak now forms speech.
Okay. Well, that's not natural at all. Sorry, these sorts of sounds aren't supposed to come out of this mouth.
Ah. Do not worry. It is obvious that you have been... it is obvious you are not of these parts. But our people know the secrets of the wild and of the animals. You are a druid, are you not? Then you would know that such things are possible to gain if animals the ability to speak as we do. Not for a very long time, but yet it is possible. Some of those who are most gifted with magic, and he gestures toward the woman, are able to do this. Especially those who have learned the secrets of the high form.
High form, right. I think Manea talked about something like that. Is it's magic, basically, that's what we call it. But that's cool. That's excellent.
You keep speaking of a man called Majesty. Do you refer to Majesty of the Lion, Majesty of the Leopard, or perhaps Majesty of the Ox?
Oh, no. Not Majesty. That's entirely different. I'm talking about just kind of a tall bloke. His name is Manea.
You just said you are not talking about Majesty, and yet you said his name is Majesty. Why do you do this?
Oh, no. Manea is not,
yes,
majestic.
Majesty.
He's a nice fellow, don't get me wrong.
This
Manea
is very confusing.
Hukaro is not majestic.
Oh, Majesty of the Eagle. There is no one here named Majesty of the Eagle. Perhaps you are referring to one of the coastal tribes. They who are of the sea. He looks very, very puzzled. He obviously thinks you keep saying the word Majesty.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Coastal people. That's it. The majesties of the coast, they're called.
Curious that a champion would choose the eagle for his name. For those of the, or they who are of the coast, do not see the eagles not nearly as often as we do here in the plains, or very much or in the hills. But no matter. If you are friends of those of the coast, then you may be friends with us. For they who are of the world are friends with all peoples, as long as they choose to be friends of ours. But all our enemies will quake in fear at our spear and at our palms. In whatever case that it is that brings you to this land, you are quite fortunate, and your timing is... What is it that Grandfather always says? Somebody whispers to him. Yes, impeccable. I believe he studied at a university somewhere. Anyway, you are most welcome. We are on our way to the hills to celebrate the feast. The new chieftain of the King Hyphantonar is being installed today, and you shall be our honored guests.
Bree just has a dumbfounded look on his face, because Hyphantonar has not been a thing in the alternate reality for a while, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, excellent. Laid on, good fellow, and we'll follow.
You may call me Strength of the Lion. This is my friend. He motions to the woman who gave you the power of speech, and she is Craftiness of the Python. What are your names?
Well, I am Kerrick of the Everlife, and this is Bruman of the Stalwart Shield.
Prowess of the Strength of the Lion laughs and says, no, there is no need for you to attach such things to your names as we do, for we know that your people do not name others as we do. I'm most impressed of your command of our language, however. Where did you learn it?
Well, it's a druid trick. I could tell you, but then I'd have to change you into a field mouse and feed you to a python. You understand.
He cocks his head a little bit. Were you to change me into a field mouse, good hawk, you should feel a kick. A kick that would be more powerful than anything you felt from such a tiny creature that would send you past these islands, over the land of Avalon, and perhaps back to where we are.
I'm just trying to explain the situation here, you know. It's not a threat.
He breaks out in a good deal of laughter. Do not worry, my friend. Your command of our language is good, but apparently your knowledge of our people is not. Be prepared for such joking if you come to meet us, which you shall now. Come with us. Our ride is not too far off, and they will actually form around you and walk with you through the woods a little ways until you come to another clearing. Meanwhile, Aesol, you wake up. Almost everything is a bit black. You can smell smoke in the air, and there are sparks around you, but you can tell that you are in the TARDIS. Most of the lights have gone out, and there's a bit of debris here and there. There are a few people lying down about you. You can see they are Mew's there, and the doctor, and Katsu. None of them seem to be awake, though.
It's just Mew, the doctor, and Katsu?
Yep, that's right. Nobody else is there.
Okay. She's gonna get up. What happened? And then she'll go over and try to see if she can wake them.
Alright, they don't seem to respond to anything. They are very comfortably sleeping, breathing alright, but they are not waking up.
Okay. Then she'll stand and, like, look around. Is the TARDIS moving at all?
No, it's not. It's very stable. However, you do suddenly hear a knock on the door.
She'll start preparing a spell and then go, I guess, glance out the door.
Okay, you cannot actually see out the window, so you'd have to crack the door open to look out.
She'll do that, just barely crack it open.
It opens up and there is a face. But there's also a spear and a perplexed looking warrior says, "Who are you and what version of King Long is this that this box has suddenly appeared?"
She's just gonna cast Snowball right in his face. Seventeen to hit?
Yeah, that hits.
Fourteen points of damage.
All right, and what's the con save on that?
DC 15.
Okay, yeah, he made it. Although he gets hit with the snowball and reflexively jumps back as he shivers a good deal and wipes the snow off of his face with his sleeve, and his spear is pointed at you again. Someone else comes along that doesn't have. Is not holding anything. seems to twirl around a bit and shove his hand towards you. Does... never mind, he critted. Okay, a wave of water suddenly materializes in front of you and smashes into you, shoving you all the way back to the other side of the wall in the TARDIS. The soldiers then suddenly open the door and start coming in. And you notice two things. One, a lot of them look like they're dressed like Manea Hukuro. Two, they don't seem to be surprised in the least that it's bigger on the inside than on the outside. But they look around at the wreckage and what's going on, and they say, "What happened here? They're still eyeing you, especially the one that got hit with a snowball, and pointing spears in your direction. Who are you? And how do you come to be here?"
Azel's not responding, but she is going to start casting another spell.
When they see that you're casting another spell, a few of them jump back, but a few of them are also beginning to cast spells too. However, you started casting first, and so your spell comes out first.
Also, sorry, my computer's being really slow, so I don't have all of my spells, like, all the descriptions of my spells, so...
That's fine, just tell me what you're casting.
I'm gonna do Call Lightning.
Yeah, okay. The save for that is Reflex, and what was the save for your snowball?
The DC for my snowball was 15. The DC for this would be a 17.
Oh, okay, thank you. He failed. He failed. She failed. And he failed too. Okay, the four that came in after you, you cast the lightning, and your hands start sparking as lightning shoots out from them. And zaps from one to the other, to the other, to the other. And all of them, how many points of damage? Do you know how much that is?
3d6.
Ouch. Okay, roll it.
11. And I kind of want to do a free action and use...
What's that?
I want to use Volatile Conduit, which adds another d4 when I cast a spell that's either acid, cold, electricity, or fire damage.
Okay, go ahead.
And that'd be another 3 points of damage.
All right, all of them suddenly convulse as lightning is traveling through their bodies. A few of them... two of them drop to their hands and knees, breathing hard, but some of them are still standing. One of them has finished a new incantation, and a fireball appears in her hand as she throws it towards you, and it's very well aimed. It is arcing in the air, coming from your head, and suddenly stops. It is floating just about 1 foot in front of you. And all the warriors there are kind of dumbfounded, wondering what in the world is going on, when suddenly a man materializes around, in front of you with his hand holding on to the fireball. As he closes his hand down, the fireball shrinks down until it's nothing. And he looks at the warriors and he says, there's no need for this. We are all friends here. The warriors instantly aren't down already go down on one knee before this man. Guardian, we are honored at your presence. The man shrugs his shoulders. I had to be in town anyway. After all, you guys are, crowning a new king. Or, excuse me, you are appointing a new chieftain. You don't crown anything. They do crowning in Kunbar. I had to bring you over there sometime so you can see. Their coronation ceremony is so majestic, so amazing. You've got I mean, not that yours isn't either. I mean, yours is great in its own way, and it has all these cool things, and you do me lots of honor, so that's good. But, you know, yeah, I talk too much. It's a thing I inherited from my dad. Okay, people, up. Why don't you escort this young lady? He looks over at you. Unfortunately, I don't know what your name is. I can tell that, I can see it in your eyes. Something important with you, something special about you. I'm not sure exactly what it is. What's your name? And before you answer, Aesol, roll a perception check. Okay, yeah, you see it. The way he's dressed, he looks like he just stepped out of the desert. Or at least an Arabian city. He's got nice white billowy pants, shoes that have a curl to them at the very edge, and he wears a white t-shirt with what seems to be some sort of hide vest, and he's carrying a staff. However, what you notice is the face. He's much younger, but looking at the position of the nose, the eyes, the cheeks, etc., this man bears a very striking resemblance to the old man who works at the base for the guild.
She'll kind of stare at him and not give him her name. She'll take another step back if she can.
Oh, frightened? Not sure what's going on? Well, that's okay. I can kind of understand that. I can assure you, though, that we are all friends here, and I won't let these people hurt you anymore. They won't want to hurt you anymore. And he looks over his shoulder. Right, guys? One of them, who had been talking to you, perks his head up and says, "Oh, great Sive Sinu. We had no idea that she was under your protection." And he bows down before him. "I beg your forgiveness, great guardian of my people." And Sive Sinu shoos him back up. No, stand up. All this bowing everybody does to me. I told you guys last time I was here. Well, last time I was here was 75 years ago. But still, last time I was here, no more of this bowing. You can, you know, say hello to me, you know, or salute me or something if you want, but all this bowing, it's a little weird, okay? Anyway, I want you all to get up, and then it's at this moment he finally notices the three on the floor. Oh, well, that's not good. And he takes his staff, and he taps very lightly on the doctor's head, and he makes a face. Okay, something should have happened. Taps him again. This isn't good. He gets down on the ground next to him. Go ahead and roll a sense motive check. Down on the ground next to him, he's listening around, running his finger over his face. Oh. Well, now. Well, nothing I can do for the three of them here, but they look to be resting comfortably, so we can leave them for now. I'll just make sure I set up a guard so that nobody touches this. This is quite the piece of engineering. I am very impressed by it. I wish I had one of these sorts of things. Wait, does it? And Sive Sinu is staring at the console. Goes over to it, runs his hand over, and shudders just a bit. I know by certain things that the people in here come peaceably. But why they come at all in the first place? Now that is a mystery. A dangerous mystery. But no need for that for now. Today is supposed to be a happy day because they're installing the new king, a chieftain. So come along, everybody. Chop, chop. And he claps his hands. Rydia, you get a sense that this guy's a really, really good guy. You don't sense any hidden agenda with him or hidden motives. From the look of him, he looks like he could easily be very mischievous. And you get a sense, because of your spellcasting abilities, and just from being around people in general, if this guy wanted to, yeah, he could cause a bit of trouble, but nothing bad. nothing nasty, everything light, good-hearted, jovial. That seems to be the kind of man that this Siv Sinu is.
Okay. So is everyone, I guess, headed out of the TARDIS now?
Yep, they are. You're the only one left, Matt, and the three resting bodies.
Okay. She'll glance at the others and then warily step out of the TARDIS, following them, just keeping her wits about her, because she has no idea what's going on.
Siv Sinu twirls his staff around and taps the ground with it. So you feel a real quaking under the ground as grapevines suddenly jump out of the ground and spin their way around the TARDIS. And grapevines form themselves on either side of the TARDIS into the shape of what appear to be large dogs. But as soon as they are completely grown, the dogs seem to take on a life of their own, shaking their fur around, scratching themselves. And Siv Sinu actually goes over and scratches one of them behind the ears. All right, you two, I want you to look after this box, okay? Nobody comes to this box except for me. If anybody does, bark at them and, I don't know, bite them or, tell them a joke. A really bad joke, so bad that they're not going to want to be around anymore. The dogs cock their head a bit at this. Whatever, just guard it, okay? Anyway, the rest of you, we got some walking to do, so let's get moving on. After you, my lady with no name, as he motions to you, Aesel, to walk ahead of him.
She will. She'll start walking. Where am I supposed to be going?
Oh, just walk forward. Don't worry about it. And as you walk forward, the road in front of you suddenly stretches, and it seems to stretch and then snap back together. And the valley that was before you is no longer there, but a mountain pass is. We're very close now.
Very close? What was that?
Oh, little trick that I taught these people. It's a bit of, oh, what do you call it? You are not Keen Hyphantonar, are you?
What? What do you mean?
King Hyphantonar, well, okay, if you knew, you wouldn't ask that. So you must be from the east, I'm thinking. Although then again, he looks back over at the box. You came in that, so I guess you could be from anywhere, actually. Anyway, little teleportation trick that I concocted. Been teaching the people this. They haven't quite got it right. They actually need a physical portal to get from one place to another. I simply grab one part of space and connect it with a different part so that you can traverse another part without having to go into the third part. That doesn't make sense, does it? So he actually opens his hand, and then there's a napkin. And he takes one end of the napkin and the other end of the napkin and puts them together. See, it's kind of like this. You take one part of space, another part of space, and you shove them together. That way, you don't have to go through all this other part that's hanging down here. Now, I can't do it for real long, so let's go over into the past so that I can let the world snap back into place. The King Hyphantonar that are with them, have already crossed over there, and once you and Siv Sinu walk over into the mountain pass, he waves his hand, and the world kind of stretches around in that place, and then snaps back, and you see a long mountain pass that winds its way back down into the valley. You have covered about 30 or so miles in 3 steps.
She is mildly impressed.
There. Now then, I really don't want to keep calling you Lady with No Name. I mean, I'll keep calling you that if it's absolutely necessary, but I'd really rather call you something else.
You can call me Aesel.
Aesel. That is quite a pretty name. It also sounds like something you put paper on to write with, but aside from that, it's a very pretty name.
Well, thank you. And what was yours again?
Ah, Here, around these parts, they call me Sieve Sinu. Though you could call me Bob if you want. I mean, that's not my name, but I suppose if you wanted to. Either way, we have a party to attend. Let's go. And with that, he will lead you on to where the rest of the people are going up to. And eventually, you come to a little village. Meanwhile, Carrick and Bruman, you've been walking through the forest until you come to a clearing. And Strength of the Lion stops you and says, "Now, you are strangers to these parts. And it's very possible that it will be quite fine with our friends to take you to the village in the hills, but it might not, so I ask that you be very respectful to the people we're about to talk to. Do either of you have a problem with taking strange orders?"
Brew cocks his head. "Depends on the strange."
As long as you're not... Oh, here they come. Maybe they can explain themselves. And you see a shadow rush over the ground. It is actually a large shadow. And you are fairly certain you saw wings as the shadow passed by. And as you look up, nearly blocked... their view is nearly blocked by the sun. But just at the very edges, you can see something flying around up there. And one of the figures circles around until it lands in the clearing. Go ahead.
I was going to say a nature check to figure out what it is.
No need, because as it comes down, you can see plainly the form of a Pegasus. It lands on the ground, shakes its mane, and Strength of the Lion comes over and gives it a small bow. "Winged warrior, it is good to see you again. I hope you do not mind, but we picked up some new travelers." And the Pegasus will turn over and look at Bruman and the hawk. And he cocks his head a bit. "You brought a hawk with you? Why do you bring a hawk? Is he not master of the skies himself?"
And Carrick will kind of, cock his head over in a very bird-like way, looking back at the natives that have been leading them. Almost like he's got a good point there.
Strength of the Lion will shake his head. In truth, he is a druid, but he is a druid of the halflings. And the Pegasus seems just a little taken aback. Meanwhile, the rest of the Pegasi that were flying around in the air, they also have landed just behind this one who seems to be their leader. "A druid of the halflings? Such a thing has not happened for many a year. Not in my time, nor my father's time. Interesting." He will walk forward over to you, Brunin, and stare very intently at the hawk. "So, halfling, where is it that you learned the ways of nature?"
Carrick will stare intently back at the Pegasus, and he'll say, "Well, first off, I'm not a halfling. There's something quite different and much smaller than I am. And, well, that's not important. The fact of the matter is, not a halfling."
Pegasi will look back over at Strength of the Lion. "He says he is not a halfling." And Strength of the Lion will shrug his shoulders. I don't know what he speaks of, but he most certainly is a halfling. I saw him in his true form." Pegasi will look back at you. "Why is it that my dear friend here claims you are a halfling, and yet you claim that you are not? What are you?"
"He claims that I'm a halfling because he needs glasses. I tried to tell him, but he doesn't want to accept it. It's alright. I've seen lots of people like this. They say, I'm alright. I can see. It's just a little bit blurry. I'll be fine. I can read it with it up close against my face. But the fact of the matter is, if he had glasses, he would know."
The Pegasus shakes his head. You are a strange little one, or a big one, whichever. What is this? If he had a glass, he could see better. This does not make sense. A glass is for seeing yourself, or for looking out, or the humans use them to look out into far places without the wind catching them, which is a foolish thing, for the wind is quite majestic. All creatures should bear the wind at all times. But
now, see, that's something I can agree with you on. The wind is really quite excellent, especially for flying.
Indeed. Though you would say so, being a hawk. Well, whatever you are, it is quite strange. And what of you, human? Where do you hail from?
Okay, so out of character, what would be his answer in the alternate reality?
In the alternate reality, you were originally from Beacon Ridge. I don't remember where you're from in the original reality.
I'm from a city called Beacon Ridge. Don't think it's anywhere nearby here.
Beacon Ridge? Strength of the Lion, is this a new city of one of your tribes that has gone out to possibly the west? Strength of the Lion will shake his head. I have never heard of this place. What is this ridge of beacons that you speak of?
Brutal scratch his head. It's by the sea.
Ah, you are of the sea dwellers. Yes, I see. Ah, have you perhaps come for the coronation of our new chieftain?
It would seem so.
Ah, excellent. There are many of your people who seem to not want to have anything to do with my friends. But if you are here to honor them, then it will be my honor to bear you up to their city. Now, on my back, and I shall take you up. Your friend, I do not think he will need any assistance. But so that you know, Little Hawk, it is a long way. Be sure, if you need to take a rest now and then.
Little Hawk, don't worry about it. I'll let you know if you need a rest. And Carrick will take off, quite offended at being called a little hawk.
Well, if he is a halfling and a druid, then such things are understandable, for that is queer. And thus, he must also be queer. But, on my back, young one, and we shall fly up to the top. And meanwhile, the rest of the they who are of the people of the land have gotten onto the backs of Pegasi also. Some of them are getting on 3-to-1 horse, but that doesn't seem to affect the Pegasus very much. However, Brunin, you are the only one that the head Pegasus seems to be letting on his back.
Aw, he's honored.
Now, you have ridden horses before, haven't you?
A normal, non-fantastic horses, yes.
Do not be concerned about offending me, for I understand there are many who do not appreciate the Pegasi, but you must understand that we are not so different from our cousins, nor that they are nearly as unmajestic as you make it sound. But this you must know. Cling on to me with your legs. I shall not let you fall, but please do not grab my mane, and do not kick me, for that does pain me very much, and these old bones will not hold up to that for very much longer. And with that, he will gallop forward just a little bit, leap, spread out his wings, and glide upward into the air. And you find that it is very easy to hang on to him. He is actually doing most of the work of keeping you balanced and on him. And all of you sail up into the air. Carrick, as you're flying up, the Pegasi zoom past you. They overtake you extremely quickly, and you look at the speed they're going at, there is no way that you're going to keep up with them.
Can Carrick see where they're going?
Yes, with your hawk eyes. Are you a hawk or an eagle?
He is a hawk.
Okay, I thought so. With your hawk eyes, you can see easily enough the direction that they're going in. They go up the mountain, turn aside a little bit at one of the ridges, and then over the edge into a forested area.
Okay, then he's just going to mutter about bad form that when you're leading someone to a place they haven't been, and you have to go speeding off. And he'll follow.
Aesel, you round a corner, or round some trees, rather, and you come to a large clearing in the hills. It looks like this is a large valley you've come into. Hills on either side. Excuse me. And before you, you see an area that's populated with a good amount of trees, but many more huts and stone pathways. Some huts ranging from small ones that you see people milling around about. Some are larger. Some are open air without any doors and have kind of appears to be a market set up there. But you can see one particular hut that is far larger and far more majestic than the rest of them. And before this is a stone dais with a throne upon it. Lots of people are milling about. It looks like everybody is filled with excitement getting ready for something. And as you walk along, you do find an area where several pavilions have been set up. People are getting tables and attractions and such prepared for what looks to be a grand festival. Sifsinu opens his arms to all of it and says, "Well, what do you think? All a grand party for their new chieftain." He kind of cocks his head. Aesel? Too stunned for words, I see. I know, it is. It's quite breathtaking, isn't it? The way they set up and the way they go about things. Not as amazing as you'd see over in, say, Kunbar or anything, but, you know, that's due to my cousin. She does a really good job of keeping up the place. And she left us. I did that whole monologue just for her, and she left us. Okay, anyway.
I have a quick question. Since she's not here, and I was just looking at Carrick's spells and realized that he has haste. So is it possible for him, when the Pegasus are trying to leave him behind, for him to cast haste since he has natural spell? So he can cast in animal form, and he'll cast haste to double his speed. Would that be enough to keep up with the Pegasus? Or
Yes. You're trailing them, and you're straining a bit. But yes, you are able to keep up with them now. All right, Aesel, I don't know how much of that you... Hang on a sec. Sorry, guys. My allergies seem to be attacking me tonight. I'm having to cough a lot. Anyway, Aesel, I don't know how much of that you heard or didn't hear, but as you turn the corner, you come to a valley. And I don't know if you've ever been to a national park or, say, Yosemite Valley, but picture that you've got mountains off in the distance to the left and to the right, and you have a valley with trees interspersed here and there, but mostly you see huts. Many of them are thatched huts. Once in a while, you see a building that's made of stone. Some smaller ones look like they're made for people to live in. Then there's some larger ones that look like they're for various different things. One is open air and looks like it's arranged as sort of a market. Another appears to be a storehouse. Another appears to be a training ground, some for archery, some for the spear. You do see now and then also people who are sparring barehanded. In fact, this is what you see most of the people training with, fighting with hand-to-hand with just bare hands. In the distance, you can see a much larger hut, much larger, more better built, mostly a good deal of stone was put into it, and you see precious gems that are put into the walls also. Before this building, there is a dais with a throne set up, but between the edge of the huts and that, there is a large field where people are running around setting up pavilions, putting out tables, and getting food ready for what looks like a grand festival. Siv Sinut turns around and spreads his arms out wide and says, "What do you think? All of this for the installation of their new chieftain. Oh, and something about honoring my arrival."
"It's amazing. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it."
Siv Sinut seems quite pleased at this. "Yes, they do a good job of it, don't they?" And as you're walking along, the people seem to have not been paying you all a heed until someone says, "Is that him? Is that him? It's Siv Sinut!" And you hear that name muttered through. The news seems to travel like wildfire. People are cheering now. "It's him! The Guardian has come! The Guardian has come!" And within just a few minutes, there is a mob around you and Siv Sinut. Everyone wanting to shake his hand, bowing to him, offering him fruits, which he takes a few and then has to decline the rest because his arms are getting too full. It's nice to be a celebrity around here, though. I don't know, sometimes it's a bit much. Okay, people, back up. And suddenly, everybody seems to move back, but not because they step back. It's almost as if the entire crowd was picked up, shoved back just a little bit, and put back down on the ground. There. That's better. Thank you. Now, I think you all have work to do. There's a festival to get started. Please, go back to whatever you're doing. My friend and I will... We'll just relax here for a while until the festivities are ready. And everybody seems to, you know, either... Some of them seem a little disappointed as they walk away because they wanted to talk to Siv Sinut. But a lot of them just bow their heads in respect and they go back to what they're doing. Siv Sinut hands Aesil an apple and says, "Hey, come on over here. Sit down with me." And he goes and sits on the dais right in front of the throne. He's not actually sitting in the throne, but he's like sitting on the steps leading up to it.
She'll take the apple, look at it for a moment, and then follow him and sit on the steps next to him.
He bites into an orange, and actually he bites into the skin of the orange too, and then he realizes what he's doing, spits it out, taps it a few times, and it rematerializes into a giant pomegranate, which then he starts eating that. So, tell me about yourself, Aesil. You seem to have just suddenly arrived here, and I'm not quite sure how it happened, but can see it in your eyes. Something special has happened to you. In fact, if I didn't know any better, I would say you've been touched by the hand of fate. Is this true? He continues to bite into his pomegranate.
Well, I'm not quite certain how I got here either. I suppose that's a long story. What do you mean, touched by fate?
By fate? You don't know of fate? Well, I suppose most over here in this realm don't know much about her. She is the ruler and, in a way, yes, the maker of the land that I come from, the land of Azur. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, again, not too surprising. Word of it doesn't get her out here too much. There's a bit of legend, rumor here and there. I'm sure some of the people in the village could tell you about it. But, indeed, she is the one who is Lady of All Things in the Land of Azur. Although the Land of Azur is indeed named for the Lord Azur, who, after a fashion, is my uncle. So I suppose you could say, after a fashion, fate is my grandmother. though we don't refer to her that way. It's, well, it's different. Different. You're still here. We are considered the guardians of, again, hard to explain, but suffice it to say that I'm not usually from around here. I'm from way over there. And fate is the one who is in charge of us all. Go ahead.
You're related to them?
Again, not in what you would call related. I am not so much as born from my father as I was formed by him. Formed for specific tasks. But that's not so important. I want to hear more about you. What is that thing you came in, this blue box that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside? Is that a... Did some of the Keen High Fantanar teach you that trick? Because that's another trick I've been teaching them.
No, it wasn't. It's called the TARDIS? I'm not quite sure how it all works. The doctor just explained it as, I don't know, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff, I suppose?
Sivsinu arches an eyebrow. Timey-wimey?
Those were the words he used.
Interesting. Very interesting. I wonder if Lord Holenvav knows about this. Well, no matter. You are here now, and that's all that really matters now. And now we are going to engage in the festivities. Come along. And he will stand up, and he will actually take your hand. When he takes your hand, you feel a jolt of something very warm. And in fact, you physically feel great. In fact, you feel much better than you have in a very, very long time. You feel energetic. You feel healthy. In fact, you feel like you could take on the world. You feel like you could run 100 miles and you wouldn't be tired. And he half leads, half drags you along to one of the things that they have set up around there. They've got some apple bobbing for apples. And they have some archery competitions going on, and he takes you around to a few of them. Meanwhile, the Pegasi arrive, and as you fly overhead, you also fly over this valley, and everyone is pointing upwards, especially all the little kids. As the winged horses fly around, you come into a large arc, a large circle, and you also land on the street in what has now become the fairgrounds. So, my friend, I hope you enjoyed the ride, and I do hope that you will remember that my cousins down below, they are not nearly as unmajestic as you make them out to be.
That was amazing, and I shall keep your words at heart.
Ah, good to hear. And do tell your halfling hawk, whatever it is, friend, that I find him most curious. Very strange, but most curious, and I look forward to meeting him again. Now, fare you well, for we have our own duties to attend to. And as soon as all of the people have gotten off of the Pegasi, they will flap their wings and fly into the air, edge of the mountains, and disappear. All around you, there seem to be festivities going on. There's some sort of festival on in full swing. You have places that have different kinds of foods all over. You have some booths with a few different games bobbing for apples. You have some archery competition. You have some of the men are doing this intricate dance. It looks like they're competing against each other, but you're not quite sure how exactly it works. At some point, though, one of them wins, and it's not real clear how it happened, and then immediately another person jumps in to challenge the victor. And this just keeps going on until somebody loses and another person jumps in. After a few minutes, though, there is a horn blown, and you can hear it all throughout the valley. And people stop what they're doing, and everybody is walking up towards the dais.
We'll look around, but then after taking in everything, we'll look back to the skies to look for Carrick.
And has Carrick caught up with them?
Yeah, it took you about 1 minute longer than the Pegasi to land, but you finally did make it, though you were a bit tired.
Carrick lands, and once he lands, he goes ahead and shifts back to half-orc form before summoning Eden and just kind of rubbing her nuzzle and giving her a bit of a hug and saying,
"Don't you worry about it. I prefer my horses without wings. You're beautiful."
And he gives her a little kiss and is like, "Go on, have some grass. I'll see if I can get you an apple." And he goes over, looks for some food, and probably finds Berman.
When you shift, many of the people are quite surprised to see a half-orc among them. And in fact, some of them part ways for several warriors to come around. None of them are armed, but they all crouch just a little. And if you've seen any kind of martial arts, then you know that they're taking stances ready to attack you. And they say, Who are you, halfling? State your business, and how in the world did you get here?"
And he just kind of turns to them as Eden is, you know, going on to have a snack and says,
"All right, so a bit of biology. You might not have taken that in school. I know a bit about it myself, as I'm a druid. So, bit of biology. Halflings are short. They're small folk, similar to gnomes and the sort. Not big, large-sized people like you and me. Well, you're all kind of big, but not even as big as me. They're like half the size of me. That's why they're called a halfling. You'd all be like a one-and-a-halfling. Actually,
what
that's a bit
babbling
right.
Are you going on about? You're a halfling. A half-orc. At least from the smell of your breath you are."
That's a mistake. I understand. It's a simple mistake. I get it. Halfling, because half-race got you. But there's actually a race called halflings. And it's quite offensive to them if you call everyone who's a half whatever. Besides, it's really very racially centric, don't you think?
Strength of the Lion shoves his way through the crowd till he gets to the warriors. "It's all right, it's all right. He came up thus. He is not of the enemy, though an extremely strange one." The warriors slowly nod their heads and step backwards. "Very well, half. One, whatever you wish to be called. If you are friend, then we indeed welcome you. And it is timely that you have come now, for we seek to set up a new chieftain today."
"All right, and you want me to officiate it?"
There is suddenly a large presence right behind you. And it's not that you saw a shadow coming, but you could feel it. "No one presides over them but me." And you turn around, and there is a very small mouse behind you.
And being a druid, do I recognize that this is a simple mouse or more than a mouse?
No, you recognize this as more than a mouse. The eyes very quickly give it away. But he bares his teeth at you and says, "Garrr! Garrr!"
Then he will attempt to speak in Druidic to it and see if it knows the language.
All right,
and
what
he'll say, "Druid much?"
"Druid? No, I am no such druid.
What do you mean, druid? Druid? You just think that every single thing that can talk is a druid? That is
only
so
druids
centric.
Can know druidic.
Druid. Oh, can they? Are you quite sure about that? And suddenly the mouse will morph, will start growing bigger and bigger and bigger until it morphs itself into a man who smiles at you with a big toothy grin. Not all who speak such things are, but perhaps there are those of us who simply know things simply because the staff twirls it around, slams it on the ground. We know. And a chair is growing up behind him made out of grapevines, which he sits at, he doesn't even look at it, but he sits down and he sits down it barely cat. It grows up until it's a nice sized stool, and he'll actually reach down and grab a cluster of grapes off of it and start eating them.
Carrick just gives him a really long very long sideways glance as he's growing a chair out of the ground. He says, in druidic, he's still speaking to him, he says, "Right, you can say whatever you want, druid. You're definitely a druid, because they're the only sort of people that grow chairs out of the ground like that. You're a druid."
Oh, really? He'll cock us over to the side. "Hey! Siv Sinu! Am I a druid?" Aesol, Siv Sinu is standing with you doing stuff, and he turns over and looks at another Siv Sinu who is talking to Carrick. Yeah, you are. But stop that trick. It weirds people out when there's two of us. The Siv Sinu in front of Carrick shrugs his shoulders. Yeah, I suppose. All right, goodbye. Snaps his fingers, and with a quick puff of white smoke, he disappears and the chair disappears.
Does she see Brumin?
Yeah, he is not difficult to see in this crowd of Keen Hyphantonar.
She'll immediately leave and just start booking it toward him.
Okay, it takes you all of 10 seconds to get to Brunin.
Brew!
He will turn around because, you know, like two minutes before he woke up here, he was holding her, and then he woke up and he wasn't holding her, and apparently she's conscious now, so he is happy to see her.
She'll hug him, be like, "What happened? What's going on?"
He will give her a very, very strong hug without trying to hurt her, because I think he's still wearing armor. I don't know, and I don't know, and he'll point over at Carrick. By the way, that's Carrick, and are you okay?
She'll momentarily glance at Carrick, give him a strange look, and then look back to Broom and be like, I'm fine. At least I think I am. How did you get here? That's Carrick? She'll look back to the half-orc.
Very, very long story. And you're sure you're okay? You don't feel...
I'm fine. Why do you ask?
Just making sure. Just making sure. And yes, that's Carrick.
Can I do a sense motive? Or, I guess, perception? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are you sensing, or what are you trying to perceive?
Basically, like, I want to know for certain if he's lying to me.
If you're doing it for Brunin, that would be sense motive versus Brunin's bluff check if he's trying to lie. Okay, well, Brunin, you're not lying in any way, are you?
No, he's just not telling her everything.
Okay. If you're not telling her everything, yeah, roll a bluff check.
Definitely not high enough. There's no way he could get 28.
Okay. Then you definitely suspect that Brunin's hiding something.
Brunin, what's going on? What do you mean?
What was the last thing he said? Was that Carrick?
He was making sure that Azel was fine, and Azel was like, why?
Okay, what was her question?
What's going on? Like, I know you're not telling me everything, Brunin. What do you mean?
He'll scratch his head again. What exactly do you remember?
Well, we were fighting, and then she'll look away for a moment. I guess a dragon, and then I woke up, and there was Muneha, and we were in the middle of a ship. I wasn't sure if you guys are there or not. And then Miles, and then I was back in the TARDIS. But you and Carrick weren't there.
Whoa. Ship? Muneha.
Yes. I woke up in this glass case, and there was Muneha and another. And we were apparently on some floating ship thing. I don't know.
Floating an airship?
Yes.
You woke up on an airship?
Yes, I did. And I thought you guys might have been captured too, but you're here.
And Miles was on an airship?
Yes. There were like 10 of him.
10 of them?
Yeah. I don't know what it was. I guess kind of blacked out before we could figure that out. And then I woke up back in the TARDIS.
Out of character, just to be sure, he did see Miles get picked up by D'Artagnan, right?
Yes, that's right, you did.
Okay, just making sure. It's been a couple weeks. Ten miles, and you woke up on an airship, but you were unconscious on the TARDIS, but, oh, my head hurts.
Unconscious on the TARDIS?
The dragon bit. After that, you passed out.
But I woke up. I thought you guys might have been captured too. What happened after? I guess I passed out.
Bruce shakes his head. After you passed out, Saul was taken out, and Malice. Oh, we let Malice out, and then the lava came up, and then we had to run. We got into the TARDIS, but it wouldn't go, and then we came out, and there was a half-orc, and the half-orc is Carrick, by the way. Carrick. That's Carrick, because the other one died. Again, long story. That's Carrick. He's okay. He's here, and Miles ran. We saw D'Artagnan, and oh, I'm very confused.
Her face falls as Bruce says Carrick died. So he's still alive, but you didn't revive him?
He's Sam Saren, remember? I forgot at first as well.
Right.
So, same Carrick, just different look?
Okay. This is so confusing. Anyway, how did you guys end up here? And why aren't the others awake? Why are they still in the TARDIS? I don't understand.
They're in the TARDIS. Well, at least that's good, I think. At least we know where they're at. He'll say, I don't know how we got here, man. It's like myth all over again. And, oh, we have to get back. D'Artagnan is going after... What is going on?
D'Artagnan is going after what? Or who?
Everyone. The base. He's coming home. We've got to fix this. How?
Well, not quite sure. We'll have to... I don't know. There has to be a reason why we're here.
Do you have any idea how you got here?
No. I was... Like I said, I was in a room with Maneha, and there were 10 miles, and I blacked out, and then, like, the world kind of spawned in the nothing, and then I woke up in the TARDIS with Mew, Katsu, and the Doctor. They were all unconscious. And then, after that, the door opened, and... Well, kind of attacked somebody, but they were kind of attacking me, too. And then, she'll turn and point at, or try to find Siv, or Siv Sinu, and then point at him and be like, and he kind of rescued me, and then... We traveled and ended up here.
Does Bruman recognize him as the old man?
No, he's a bit far away, so no, you don't recognize him.
Okay.
And actually, as you're talking, you hear more horns blow, and someone up at the dais cries out, "Hear ye! Hear ye! Gather one! Gather all! Gather they who are of the seas. Gather they who are of the plains. Gather they who are of the hills. Gather they who are of Hyphantonar. Come to the coronation of the new chieftain." And at this, everybody will stop what they're doing, and they will come and approach to the dais. There is a large crowd that's kind of pushing everybody forward. Carrick, you're at a table somewhere out in the distance. Do you come up to the dais to watch the coronation?
Carrick, I actually kind of imagined that he'd gone out into a open green space where Eden had been eating and just kind of sat down on the ground to eat with her. So he probably, kind of look over to her and be like, "Well, what do you think there, girlie? Should we go over and see what all the hubbub is about?" And with a snort from her, because incidentally he casts Speak with Animals on her and is speaking to her in Sylvan. So with her consent, then he stands up and the two of them approach, but they stay on the outside, kind of towards the back. And he's standing next to Eden, probably peanut gallering the whole thing.
All right. The crier steps down, and Strength of the Lion actually steps up and holds up his hand for quiet. "Good people, men, women of my tribe, cousins from afar, we welcome you to the hills and to the coronation of our new chieftain. The period for mourning for my grandfather has passed. It is now time for the greatest of us to rise and to rule over all the peoples. You have been told who has been put forth as candidates for the new chieftain, one from each of the tribes. The council has discussed, and the new chieftain has been chosen. Come forth, Strength of the Ox." A man who is actually just slightly taller than everybody else will step out of the crowd. And he will come forth to the dais, and he kneels before Strength of the Lion. You who are of the Ox, do you he will put his hand on the guy's head. Do you solemnly swear to uphold the culture of the people, to protect the people, and to always guide the people as Siv Sinu will guide you? The man raises his hand and then puts it across his chest and says, I so solemnly swear. He then stands up, sits in the chair. Strength of the Lion will then kneel on the ground, raise his hands up, and says, Guardian of the people, Siv Sinu, if our choice of chieftain pleases you, we beg you to crown him as our ruler. A spark of light appears in front of the chair on the dais, and an outline of a man starts appearing, but very quickly it starts dimming and suddenly growing dark, and the image of a man all clad in black appears. Majesty of the Strength of the Lion jumps to his feet. Who are you? You appear as our guardian Siv Sinu, but you are not him.
No, I am not that piece of filth. I am him reborn. Him, as he should have been.
And the three of you recognize this voice. This is Susivni. Susivni turns around on the crowd.
People of Hyphantonar, behold, I am the true...
Something from the side plows into Susivni, and him and whatever it is start rolling around until the thing jumps off of him. It's Siv Sinu staring down at Susivni.
You... I thought we banished you back to the void forever. a futile attempt. I was born of the void. I was the first born of the void. But you know this already, Invisus. I have come to claim what is rightfully mine. But first, I'm going to take your people.
At this, most of the people are starting to run away. Some of the warriors have stood their ground, though, and some have grabbed spears. Some are getting into position for their martial arts. Some of them are starting incantations. However, Siv Sinu raises his hand. He does not take his eyes off of Susivni. He raises his hand and waves it at them. And suddenly, all of the King Hyphantonar are blown back a great distance, all the way back to the smaller huts. So that's all that's left is him, Susivni, and the three of you.
You shall have nothing to do with my people, as you shall have nothing to do with this world. We cast you out of Azerbaijan, and we shall cast you out of this as well.
He slams the ground with his staff, and behind Susivni, a giant hand made of grapevines rises in the air and plows itself down on him. But a black mist simply raises itself out of the grapevines until Susivni is standing on top of them, and the ones he is touching begin to wither away.
Do not think that you can take me so easily, brother. I am you. We are evenly matched.
Susivni shakes his head. We would be. One problem.
You don't really know our practice of taking on champions, do you? You never did that.
Well, watch this. So Susivni leaps backwards in the air and very quickly takes from behind his back a bow. There was no bow behind him before. But somehow it materialized and he takes it. He also reaches back, not there, pulls out three arrows, knocks them to his bow, and fires. And each one of them hit each of you in the heart. His aim was very, very deadly. And three blue arrows sink into your hearts, and the scenery around you fades away into white. And when you can see again, You now see that you are standing on clouds. In front of you is Susivni, and he's sitting, lounging in a throne of grapevines. He, however, is about four times his normal size. He looks down at you and says, "I am Invesus, the guardian of prosperity and good fortune. And here I am Susivni, guardian of the people of Hyphantonar. Heroes from another realm, I now name you my champions. This dark apparition, Susivni." And then he starts laughing and laughing and laughing. Okay. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I just love doing this. I actually stole this idea from my cousin, and it's great. Okay. Enough of this. And he waves his hand away. The throne disappears, and he comes back down to normal size. Okay, guys. Here's what's happening. This Susivni guy, he was banished to the void a long time ago. A very long time ago. He shouldn't be around anymore. Somehow he's come back. I need your help to drive him out. Will you agree to be my champions for right now?
I think we're all staring dumbfoundedly at him.
Aza will finally nod.
Okay, good. There's one. How about the other two? You know, usually my cousins don't give people the option. I'm being nice and letting you decide. If you don't, Susivni might turn you into dust or turn you into inky blackness. I'd rather that didn't happen. I'd rather you fight with me against him to help these people. So, how about it?
We'll fight him for sure.
All right, well, if all you want is for us to fight him, that's all you had to say to begin with.
Perfect! And he claps his hands together. Now, warriors of chosen of Invesus, I grant you the power of the god of prosperity and good fortune. And suddenly, your armor takes on a very bright gleam. Your weapons also start shining. And Aesol, your hands start glowing with a bright white light. Now, go forth. Do battle. Wipe this guy off the face of the earth. And the clouds disappear, and you are back in place. And all of you feel much stronger. If any of you had been missing hit points or spells, they are all back. And currently, any action that you perform, take all variable numbers, such as damage or range or time, etc. Multiply everything by 1.5. You don't get to multiply your dice rolls, but your attack rolls, but results for damage and stuff for spells, etc. You can multiply that by 1.5 for this encounter. So please roll your initiative.
Six or nine if we're doing 1.5 on initiative as well.
Sure.
Okay, what are we multiplying?
Basically everything except for your attack rolls, you can multiply by 1.5.
So we multiply the dice roll or multiply our total?
The total.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And what's Aesol's initiative?
21.
Okay, and Okay. All right. Susivni reforms himself from the hand. and now he stares at all of you, seeing that you are glowing in white light. Who are you people? What do you have to do with this? Invesis shrugged his shoulders. Well, there are passersby, and I thought, hey, this would be fun. And turns out they're a whole lot more use than anything before. So, guys, have at 'em. Carrick, you respond first. And as you start moving, you realize that, hey, your feet are moving fast. So you actually can move your distance 1.5 also. Susivni is only about 20 feet away. What are you going to do?
All right, well, if he's 20 feet away, then Carrick is going to... Carrick will... he's going to do a... I guess he's going to ride around behind Susivni with his quarterstaff out, and just kind of like raise it up in the air as he's riding, and as he reaches the other side of Susivni, and he's going to stop within melee range, still on his horse, he will cast Call Lightning. And that is a DC 19 reflex save.
All right, he did not make it.
Okay, so that is 12 on the dice, so that would be an 18, correct? For damage? Or are we not?
Take the total damage and multiply it by 2.
Oh, multiply the total damage by 2.
Yes. Okay, so sorry. Yeah, you're correct. 1.5. So yeah, that would be 18
points of damage. And he is basically he's put himself in a position where he will be able to do flanking with Bruman.
All right, you come around and Susivni tries to move out of the way as you get into position and call down the lightning. But this glow of yours, and now on your horse, makes you faster than you were before. And he's not quick enough to react. As the lightning comes down and shocks him right in the middle, it travels all around him, and the lightning has a white glow to it. Obviously hurting him a good deal, but he's still ill standing. He kind of just shrugs it off. No matter, Invesis. You and your little pawns can do nothing to me. The question, the spell's DC. Yes, the 1.5 will affect the spell's DC also. After Carrick is Aesel.
I'm going to cast Burst of Radiance.
Remind me what that does.
Spell fills area with brilliant flash of shimmering light. Creatures in area are blinded for 1d4 rounds or dazzled for 1d4 rounds if they succeed a reflex save. Evil creatures in the area take 1.4 points of damage per caster level, whether they succeed the reflex save or not.
Okay, so what is the save and what's the damage? Because this is definitely an evil creature.
With the 1.5, the DC is 24, and the damage is 23.
All right, he makes the save. As the light comes in, he's able to shield himself with his hand, and you see this kind of like black aura appear around him. But it's obvious that this wave of light energy hits him pretty hard as he takes the damage. It actually skids him back just a little bit, but he's still able to brace himself against it and just glares at you for having dared to touch the Great Susivni. And now it becomes... go ahead.
And he's dazzled for 4 rounds.
Oh, okay. Dazzled means that they can't attack. I should know this, I'm forgetting.
They take -1 penalty on attack rolls and sight-based perception checks.
Okay, thanks. He is quite upset that you would dare to use such a spell on him. He then raises his hand, pulls it down, and a black aura pulsates out of him. Everybody, please roll. Go ahead.
Attack of opportunity for casting a spell.
Yes, go ahead.
All right, that is... 10
No, that does not hit. It's almost as if he's not looking at you. It's almost as if he has eyes in the back of his head, though. And as you swing your staff, he contorts his body so that it completely passes by. When he brings his fist down, then a pulsating wave of dark energies flies out from him. Everybody will need to make a reflex save for half damage. The DC for this save will be 17.
18.
19.
Are we adding the 1.5 to this as well?
Yes, you can add that to your save.
Thirty-four for Azel.
All right, you all pass. So the roll was 11. So you take 6 points of damage. Yeah, which it's not much, and he seems to be actually surprised that this is not affecting you, and he turns his ugly eyes on Invesus, who suddenly punches him in the face and missed. He goes for it, but Susivni sees it and just kind of moves backwards, puts his foot out, and trips him, and Invesus falls flat on the ground. Bruman, your turn. Yes, that's right, 6 damage. Rounded up from halfway.
Okay. He's still 20 feet away?
From you guys, he was only about 15, maybe.
Okay. He will mention to Azel as he pulls out his... and starts to move that he can only protect her if she stays close by, which, obviously, he didn't protect her that time. But that's only because I'm confused as to whether he could have or not, so we can figure that out later. But then he will pull out his sword and step forward to go attack the guy.
All right, roll your attack. A 25 does hit. Roll damage.
Fire damage as well?
Yes.
Okay, 18 total.
Okay, you swing your sword, and he was busy tripping Invesus, looking glum about it. And as soon as he looks up, your sword comes at his face. And it slices down his face and down his shoulder. He backs up just a little in pain at it as he shakes off and the fire dissipates. His skin reforms just a bit, but there's still a small groove in his forehead that you've made there. You said the damage was how much?
18.
Thank you. All right, after Brumin, back to the top. Carrick, your turn.
All right, so Carrick is going to, first off, zap him with another lightning bolt, because that thing's going to be around for the next 7 minutes. So that's a DC 28 reflex save.
Yeah, he does not make that.
Then that is 21 points of lightning damage. And then Carrick is going to cast haste on everybody.
Can you cast two spells in the same turn?
Because he cast the lightning bolt last time. And it remains.
Ah, I see.
He can cast it. It says, you need not call a bolt of lightning immediately. Other actions, even spellcasting, can be performed first. So yes.
Okay. Sounds good.
I think that's how I understand.
Yes, I agree.
So...
All right, you okay, zap him.
And then he casts haste on everybody.
You zap him, and again, he's trying to move out of the way, but after getting hit by Brunin, he seems to be just a little more sluggish, and the lightning bolt comes down on him. He's looking just a little bit beat up and very surprised at it.
Who do you think you are, mortals? You dare touch the god of famine?
Aesol, your turn.
Azul's going to cast Call Lightning.
Cast away. What's the DC? What's the reflex save for that?
Sorry, things were not working for a moment there. The reflex save is 25.
Oh, he barely doesn't make it.
Twenty-three points of damage.
How do you want to do this?
Oh, gosh. She'll just focus on him, like just stretching out her arm and just let loose and lightning bolt. I don't know.
A lightning bolt strikes him, and then another and another, as you feel the power of Invesis flowing through you, enhancing your magical powers. Lightning bolts, suddenly one after another, stream from your hands, clouds materialize over the sky, and this giant bolt just slams into him, burrowing a hole into the ground. And he is lying out on the ground at the bottom of this hole, smoking and just groaning softly. Invesis stands up and dusts himself elf off. Well, that was quite impressive. Yes, see, I knew that it was a good idea for me to choose you as my champions. even though I tripped. Not my finest moment. I do better with soul. Well, no, actually, soul beats me every time. But that aside, I am most grateful to all of you. And he will actually climb down, pick up Susivni, and climb back up. Now, I think my father would like to have a word with you, and Lord Azur, and probably Lord Mafik also. Anyway, mortals, I am very, very glad to have met you and very thankful. But I need to take this piece of trash, ash, away to a place where he's not going to hurt anybody else ever again. Oh, I just remembered something. You need to find a way to get out of here, don't you? As you don't belong here, I've surmised. In fact, I don't even think that... Are you even from this world? Yeah, meant Alizar. Retcon that for Alizar. Thank you.
Suppose that depends on what you mean by this world. Probably not this time.
And Vesus nods his head. That's what I thought. Time travel. Most times I would say this is a very dangerous thing, but there's something different about all of you. I think you are meant to be doing this, whatever it is you're doing. But I caution all of you, and he points a finger at each one of you, be careful. Time is not something that you play around with, especially in this realm. But let's get you all back to where you need to go. If all of you would step this way. And as he takes one step, suddenly the forest with the TARDIS is right next to you.
Carrick just reaches down and pats Eden, who he's still riding, just to calm her after that experience.
Bru will stop outside the TARDIS and look over at Azel. If this doesn't go the way we hope, then you're still on that airship. But don't worry. We'll come get you.
She'll smile grimly back. Well, never know. Might save myself.
He'll smile at her. Wouldn't doubt it.
Invesus walks into the TARDIS and looks around. Oh, this is a mess. This is a mess. Not acceptable. And he will whistle. And grapevines that grew up from somewhere outside worm their way into the TARDIS and start grabbing things and putting it all back together. And after a few moments, everything is back in place where it should be. And everything is sparkly clean and smells very strongly of grape juice. Now then...
While he was doing that, Carrick just kind of leaned on a side rail, pulled out his pipe, and lit it, and spoke to the others. Said, "Told you, he's a druid. No chance it's anything else. Definitely a druid." And he just stands there smoking his pipe.
The smoke of your pipe forms itself into a face that winks at you and then dissipates. After a moment. Everything's clean, everything's set up. The three other people are still lying on the ground, unconscious. But Invesus walks over to the center console. Ah, look at you. Okay. I think I know what the problem is. And he puts his hand on the tube in the center. And then slowly you see light coming on, and then the tube starts churning, pumping up and down, and you hear the familiar grind of the TARDIS. All right, that should be that. And then Invesus drags the unconscious Susivni outside. All right, everybody, you all have a good time, and happy trails, and I do hope that someday we run into each other again. No matter what time it is that you're going to, look me up. I kind of live forever, so it's kind of nice that way, being immortal. So anyway, see you all 2,000 years, 3,000, I guess? Yeah. From the smell of you, I think that's where you came from. Okay, bye now. And he walks outside, the doors close, and the TARDIS starts churning. And as it's churning, a bright white light appears. You don't know where it came from, but the light becomes very bright, enveloping everything until it disappears. The doctor is still lying unconscious, as are the other two. Aesel, your vision kind of blurs, and suddenly you are back on the airship with hiding with Manea. However, inside the TARDIS, Brunin, Aesel swoons into your arms, completely unconscious. And that's where we're going to pause for tonight and pick up next week.
Well, I think he at least feels better about carrying her this time.
Aesel's unhappy with that, but she was kind of expecting it.
And if you're ultra confused about anything, don't worry. All will be made clear soon. If not this episode, if not the next episode, then the one after. There should only be two more sessions if we get a time where we can actually get everybody together.
Well, hopefully that's soon.
In the meantime, this one was fantastic, as expected.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Aw, thank you guys.
Yes, it definitely was.
And now, one of Aesel's main concerns has been, well, taken care of, because she totally thought that the others were on the ship somewhere.
Yes, we have various people in various places, and it's all timey-wimey, gooey stuff.
And Aesel's happy to know that everyone else is okay, too. Well, for the most part.
They're at least alive. That's the important part.
Yep.
Hey, were either of you two girls... maybe you weren't. Have either of you two heard about the tale when the dark version of the gods attacked Azerbaijan?
Nope.
I know.
Okay. Well, that is where I'm getting Susivni from. He is the dark version of my deity, Invesis.
Makes sense.
This is actually...
Yeah, that's going way back.
That is going way, way back. So this is really great because now I'm being able to combine all the various lore things that I had been toying with or inventing for Hyphantanar. Like, I decided a long time ago I was going to make Invesis the guardian for the King Hyphantanar or the King Took. I just hadn't been able to plug him into anything yet.
Well, this was all very fun, and it was great. So I had a great time with Carrick.
Excellent. So. All right, thank you, everybody. I'm going to have to go and get dinner now. But Quicksilver, just for you to know, I may or may not be around on Tuesday because I discovered I have jury duty. And I have no idea how long it's going to last, so I might be here, and I might not. And I won't know until Tuesday. I won't know until, you know, just, like, I won't know until the last minute on Tuesday.
Gotcha. Okay, so if you're not here, kill your character.
Yes. No! You've done that already.
Good plan. I approve of this plan.
Ha ha ha. Look, I killed off Kara because I knew he could come back.
You could come back, the party can find a druid, they'll reincarnate you, and you might be a badger. It'll be fine.
Alex would not appreciate being a badger. I mean, his beautiful Rupal tail would be gone. That would be unacceptable. He would be looking for potions to transform him back into a Rupal.
I think that would involve having to pay off a druid and then commit suicide somewhere.
He'd do it too.
Wonderful plan. Wonderful plan.
Well, I just can't wait for Carrick to get back to base and get to take another pass at Raven. Because that's... we're going to find out if she likes half-orcs.
Oh, don't worry. You'll have your chance, I think. Okay, so I am going to get off now and get something to eat. Thank you very much, everybody, and I'll see you later.
Thank you. This was fantastic.
Yep, good night. Alright, well, good night, everybody. I think I am also going to turn in, because it's after 11 o'clock here.
Alright, good night.
Good night, glad you could come.
Good night.